This is the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified Podcast. Mr. Robert, what are we talking about today, sir?
Well, you know, the one thing that kind of caught my eye, and which I thought was kind of weird, and I don't use Kaseya, was this Kaseya NDA. So basically, your RMM tool infects you and encrypts you and then tells you they'll help you get out of it if you promise not to tell anybody. That's the way I understood that.
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation on that, exactly what this comes out. But yeah, there was some Reddit posts around it where, you know, if you wanted the decryptor from Kaseya, you had to sign an NDA. And it looks like since the original posting that both the MSP that was affected and the end client for the network to be decrypted, both parties had to sign the NDA.
But does anybody, what did the NDA say? That I won't disclose I was infected, that I won't disclose that I'm a Kaseya customer?
All the above, maybe just the simple fact. I mean, it's all pure speculation. I haven't seen the NDA being posted on the internet at all. So if anybody's listening and or watching on YouTube or one of the social media platforms and you got it, please let it send it to us. We would love to see it. But
Eric loves clicking on random links from strangers.
Yeah, so gosh, especially your OnlyFans page.
That's two birds with one stone, Eric.
That's right, sir. That's right.
Don't you think that part of the NDA is to not share the NDA?
Yeah, it's like Fight Club.
Yeah. You know, I think the whole NDA thing is really built to keep that number at about 1,500. And customers that were affected. I don't think Kaseya wants that number going up, and the NDA helps with that.
So I was kind of curious, and I think it's already, I really know what the answer is, but what your guys' thoughts are, you know, is there going to be potential backlash on Kaseya for actually releasing a decryptor, making people sign an NDA, but those companies who have already got with a firm like ours or another incident response firm and has talked to ReEvil, paid for the decryption, and now Kaseya is just giving it away for free. Is there going to be potential recourse for those customers who are end user customers that went on it alone?
I think there's always recourse. It really depends how much money you want to spend on the legal side of things. And it also depends on if they can prove Kaseya paid for the decryptor. Now, if Kaseya did not pay for the decryptor and it was given to them, I don't see the need for an NDA. Maybe a need for a hold harmless agreement, but not necessarily an NDA.
I don't think NDAs can really protect them in that type of fashion.
A lot of people will just take it at face value and think they can't say anything.
Exactly. A lot of people don't understand that. They're just going to say, oh, I signed an NDA, I can't talk, which is fine. Everybody counts on that.
Well, Brian, you're famous for a lot of NDAs. What do you think?
Can't talk about them. What's the deal?
Yeah. Here. The first rule of an NDA is you can't talk about it. I look at this as, you know, for MSPs, this was technically a supply chain attack for us, right? One of our tools we were using. And then, you know, the vendor, you know, in my opinion, from what I've been hearing, could have done a lot better job helping out our channel through this than they did. You know, as we experienced, other vendors were the ones who kind of took the lead on this, giving MSPs direction. And then they get a hold of a decryptor key that could ultimately make all of this pain go away for those that still have pain, which I'm sure everyone does. I'm not, trust me, I've been there. And then they're almost using the same playbook as the threat actors, where it's like, hey, we've got this way to decrypt your information for you. We could do it in 5 minutes, send you the key, but you have to, you know, it's a quid pro quo. You have to do this for us before we do this for you.
Are you right? Calling Kaseya a ransomware group?
They're, I mean, in a sense, they are holding back something that, you know, we need,
Brian,
to remedy.
We got to jump off the fence here, buddy. You got to say yes or no.
I'm not, obviously they're not a ransomware group, but they're using similar tactics to try to get what they want from MSPs, right?
That is a very interesting thought, and I have not thought about that, but I don't disagree with you, quite honestly.
So, I mean, I don't know who their PR person was, or it was probably their legal team that said, we have to have this, and it needed to be thought through a little bit more, in my opinion.
Hey, since we're on the subject of Kaseya, something else just popped in my mind. What's the deal I keep hearing with IT Glue now, that if you had like a 1-year agreement with them, it auto renews at 3 years if you don't tell them within 30 days of the renewal date?
And you have to pay above publicly listed price, the 3%. uptick.
And you even do, I didn't realize you could do that. I mean, this, if this is legal, then this to me seems like a really great concept where you can auto renew somebody for longer than their initial term.
In most states, they don't allow that, but this is Gusea we're talking about. They are tip of the speared monkey and they can do whatever it is they feel like. But, you know, not to beat up on Gusea too much.
Well, you want to talk about SolarWinds?
You know, the SolarWinds breach was in the news again this morning where federal prosecutors were targeted by that attack.
So something if you like 23 email accounts compromised, I think, or 27.
I did not see how many were compromised, but they said high value prosecutor email accounts, whatever that means. So I'm assuming that's the U.S. attorney for districts.
One has to wonder how much information actually transcends email.
I think a lot. I think everything is email, quite honestly.
I would have thought maybe some things would have been coded or somehow changed after the Podesta and Hillary Clinton's compromise and stuff like that, because there was a lot of security stuff that was slid around, you know, passed back and forth that I would think they would stop
doing. Yeah, but those are email accounts that were not under the control of or non-DOJ email accounts, right? This is talking about SolarWinds, Orion being used to help breach federal prosecutor accounts. And again, SolarWinds is the gift that keeps on giving, right?
Do you think inside one of these email accounts, they would actually talk about somebody they have on the inside of a criminal organization, maybe mention them by name or something like that? I mean, could these accounts be of that value that that we have people now whose lives are at risk if their identity gets out?
I think you have to look at the way Russia and China are thought to operate. They will collect everything and put it into a big funnel, put it into a database, index it. They may not need it today, but 5, 10, 15 years from now, the data is there. Again, I don't know what the OPSEC for the DOJ is or would be for something like this.
It'd be one of those things. So if 4 or 8 years from now you decide to run for president, the data is there.
Which is not unlike anything else. You know, it's just different. You know, now it's ones and zeros as opposed to a VHS or Betamax recording of something.
Well, I mean, the government has lost the ability to redact that information before it hits the public now, like they tend to like to do.
Correct.
Right. So
they've lost the ability to protect that, because even if they put out their own version with the redacted part and everything, then it becomes very easy to match with a clean version that's out there on the internet. Yeah. Here's the redacted version. Here's the clear version.
You can have a redacted version. You can have a non-redacted version. And then floating around somewhere is a third version that's probably the truth.
But that brings up a question that I had a little bit ago. It's like how. But so you got these companies that we deal with that always say that, oh, well, we just have your metadata. We just have anonymized data. But really, how anonymized is it? I mean, we have a case in point that I'll bring up for those who are watching this on the video, you know, where a U.S. Catholic church had one of its bishops had its de-anonymized or whatever.
De-anonymized.
De-anonymized. Thank you. And they were able to go back and find his, you know, link him to Grindr.
I don't think anything is anonymous. And once there's metadata, I mean, Eric, come on, this is your wheelhouse, right, for IR. Metadata is the thread you pull on to unravel everything. Mm-hmm. So unless it's truly anonymized, there's probably no way around it. Any of these subscription sites, you got credit cards, you got IP addresses. I don't think he was savvy enough to run a VPN.
I don't know if a VPN would have even covered it. I mean,
well, if he's putting his image on there and his GPS lock data, there's not much you can really hide.
Exactly. Because I think from the little bit that I've been able to decipher and go through, everything was done on a mobile device. So
are you making a pun there because of Grindr?
No, I was just saying, I mean, whether you have, you know, Apple or Google devices in your wheelhouse, they're collecting data. They're sending it back to Apple. They're sending it back to Google.
Let me ask you a question here. And Robert, Brian, this is to you as well. How many of you guys are using Alexa, Siri, Cortana, and any other version of AI?
I have them everywhere.
Snake Child.
I have them everywhere. Everywhere. They make my life easier when they work.
And those things are recording 24/7 to be able to identify you saying, hey, absolutely. FBI, do this for me.
Absolutely. But I have my meetings in which I want accuracy. I leave my phone on my desk and me and the person, or I want anonymity I leave my phone on the desk and me and the person walk outside away from my front of my office.
But that's the world we live in here today, right? Everything is connected, and the telemetry data going back to Microsoft, Apple, or any vendor out there is going to get people in trouble one way or the other, I think.
It's going to catch people lying, Shiva, because people will, and then they'll get court orders to pull that data in and be able to compare and know that you're lying.
But they've already been doing that, getting the court orders for.
But it's going to get more and more. It's going to get more and more down at a local level. I think it's going to get as people start realizing it. Not everybody realizes it now, but it's starting to get there.
I was going to jump in real quick. I think it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? I mean, I think people need to be held more accountable. We just had corruption hit our local politics here locally with the legalization of marijuana. You had all these drug dealers that are like, I don't want to lose my business. So they're trying to get into it legally. They hire lobbyists. They funnel money into local politicians' pockets. The FBI is now investigating it. The guy that was getting the most money committed suicide last year. I mean, it's, you know, elected officials need to be held accountable, right? And because they just lie too much. But on the flip side, you know, the wrong people get that info, like another country or a big tech company that is a special interest themselves and uses that information to swayed elected officials themselves to get bills passed. You know, that's where it's being used the wrong way, in my opinion.
Corruption, or there's the misuse of technology, or whatever. I mean, anything done outside the law, I guess, could be defined as corruption.
So a few months ago, Eric and I did an interview with Vince Chrysler over at Darkcubed. And for those of you that don't know who he is, former CISO of the White House, built the first civilian SOC at the White House and helped to put together a lot of what DHS was using, I guess, in the early 2010s. And he was seriously concerned about Tuya, which is on the screen here. And they manufacture everything from SimpliSafe to Schneider Electric. And they have basically produced everything IoT we have in our houses. Have you guys read this article or any of these articles?
I haven't seen that.
No, I'm behind on that one.
What are we supposed to do? You either use the tech or you don't use the tech. I'm never buying a refrigerator that's connected to the internet, but I know many people who do. And
Tito, what's your LG refrigerator telling you? You need to go buy some more milk and bread.
I know, and I don't want somebody sending me a message saying if I don't send them a Bitcoin, they're going to burn my house down or destroy my refrigerator either.
All your food's going to go bad in 24 hours.
And I've locked the doors and you've got 24 hours or you're going to lose everything.
I think the issue here that needs to be addressed is the fact that people are putting all kinds of devices on their home networks, office networks, without considering who's manufacturing and what is calling home. As you can see here, Darkcube found out that these things are going back to Chinese servers. Surprise, surprise. But why isn't anyone talking about this? Everyone's talking about software to help protect this, software to help protect that. Eric, you're IR. What can you do with software if the hardware is inherently compromised?
Not much. I mean, there's a lot of times where you can try to helpfully separate the software from the hardware. So we'll take the Supermicro incident, for example. You know, you have, you know, either a Windows or a Linux OS for VMware that's running on top of the hardware. So, you know, the software OS will run fine, but the hardware may be binketing back on their management platform, which is what it was doing. So, you know, if you had, and I forget what Supermicro's version of the comparison for Dell's iDRAC or Lenovo's BMC is, but the management interface and equipment was essentially what's beaconing back and sending that data back over. So, I mean, you got to, you know, take the stance like Darkcubed is taking and some of the other people that are in the industry and look at that beaconing data and find out exactly what is actually communicating and really go with zero trust, not only allowing certain MAC addresses to actually show up and connect, but filter and monitor those MAC address ARP caches and connections to see what it's actually doing.
Well, my thought on it is it's the old age discussion of security versus convenience, right? So we've got all these people wanting all these devices, including me, for convenience, and you're naturally giving up some sort of security. It's even worse when these devices have chips made in other countries that have interest.
That's every device. That's every single device, even that pretty little dado behind you.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I think really ultimately what needs to happen is kind of similar to what we see in our industry now. It's like, there's got to be like bug bounty programs. There's got to be these firewall companies that are seeing this traffic from these IoT devices, reporting it to these, you know, vendors, holding them responsible or accountable.
How are we going to hold Tuya accountable? Chinese company in China.
Well, there aren't they a supply chain? They're a supply chain vendor for a vendor in the US that's selling us products, right?
Okay, so you spank the vendor here and say, hey, you guys should not use them. So what, they go to the factory down the block?
So, well, this kind of gets back to our previous president who was trying to bring things back to the US for manufacturing and create a lot of incentives around that, right?
Okay.
That's what needs to happen.
I love getting political, and I'm happy we have Robert on here for this one. Like Mortal Kombat today.
Fight.
I'm trying to figure out who's going to do these manufacturing jobs when you've got almost 1 million people, our previous president, allowed to die, and now those people have to move into the, you know, our service industry. So now, and people ain't creating children like they used to. So do your part.
We've got plenty of immigrants coming into the country that I'm sure would love a manufacturing job.
Now that would definitely be the way of doing it. We used to have a good flow of immigration in here.
I'm sorry. Who's Native American here?
Exactly right.
Gotcha. Okay.
None of us. We're all immigrants.
Let's talk about bringing manufacturing back for a second. We get the consumers to agree to pay 10 times the price they pay for something right now because we have the insurance companies. We have the lawyers that have put a cost on human life, not a value. We got all that. Who's actually going to do the manufacturing?
I think it was just a general consensus of Robert and Brian to be able to use some of the other immigrants maybe from south of the border that's coming in by droves to put them in the manufacturing plants.
I'm more going along the lines of the training for these people. The trades have been suffering for talent for the last 20 years because everyone was sold a bag of goods. Go get a degree.
Yeah, go get a degree. And now you're working at Starbucks or Dunkin'.
I mean, I guess my answer to that is if China can do it, why can't we?
Well, China has forced labor camps. We don't.
Yep.
Yet.
There you go.
But if they need labor, they have a way of acquiring it. So maybe we could bring back the Japanese internment camps.
No, I said that as a joke, because why wasn't the headline as we were moving all our manufacturing over to China? This is how we're able to get it cheaper, right? It's not because, you know, they devalued their own dollar. If they were... In the U.S., they'd be breaking countless labor laws with how they treat their staff. So, you know, we, you know, ultimately exploited China's resources, and now we're feeling the brunt of that. Right now they have control of things that
I totally agree with you. It's that we were passively allowing it to happen so we could get a $29 DVR. And a big TV. So we could raise our perceived standard of living could be raised. We allowed it to happen. You know, the last, what was Curtis Mathis was the last television manufacturer in the United States, and they finally couldn't, there was no way for them to compete.
But everybody wants cheap prices, right?
Everybody wants cheap prices and complain when the quality's bad.
Now, Eric, I have a webpage here shared. I don't know if you want to throw it up.
Absolutely.
This goes back to the infamous Mr. Podesta that Robert mentioned earlier today. Himself and a lot of former senior senators have registered to become lobbyists for Highway. What do you guys think about that?
That is unfortunately the way it's done. And lobbyists are the biggest thing we've got to fight in this country in our political process, in my opinion, because all that is legalized bribery. That's going on. And we're sitting here watching it happen.
Don't you think that former senators should have this little thing called patriotism and not try to lobby to bring Chinese MSS in? I'm sorry, Highway in?
It's not going to happen.
They are just like everybody. The vast majority of Americans is, you know, how we're going to put money back into our pocket, right? So it's all about, you know, how am I going to take care of my family, do what I got to do? And, you know, the whole, you know, money is the root of all evil is what it's going to boil down to. Until we get to a place like freaking Star Trek, where money is not a, you know, is a commodity. It's not, you know, a necessity. Everybody's doing things for the good of other people. You know, trying to be optimistic, I would love for that to be a reality one day. I don't think it's going to be in any of our lifetime or our kids' lifetimes, but until, you know, you get to that quote unquote utopia where, like I said, you know, the currency is different. It's not based off of monetary value of some sort. You're going to have this.
Speaking about monetary value, Eric, what are you seeing in the ransomware side of the fence these days?
Things are slow. We still have, you know, a couple players out there. We got Lockbit 2.0. Conti's starting to ramp up a little bit. There's a couple other ones, but they're laying really, really, really low right now. You know, you shared up an article just a little bit ago that I'll bring up on the screen for those who are watching the live stream. But we've got what looks like, I'm going to say I agree about 80% with this article, and I disagree with it about 20%. You know, where ransomware gangs are losing interest in the extortion sites. And to a degree, that is true. So the main point of this whole extortion site was to make companies feel ashamed and pay up. It's like, oh, well, I'm a healthcare, or I'm a this, or I'm a that. And now my name and all this information is posted up there. These companies don't care. Like, you and I have seen it. We've even gone on LinkedIn and Twitter, you know, bashing companies like, you're in the insurance business and you did no disclosure and you're in California or New York and you haven't said nothing, right? They don't care. They don't, you know.
But in their defense, they don't have to, because nothing happens to them. I know that's not the right way to look at it, but that's the fact of the matter.
And I think that's what the whole point of the name and shame was supposed to be, was to force something to happen. It's like, look, if you don't pay, you're going to get up there and then the government's going to freaking know, your municipalities, you know, your competition, all that. So you would think that there would be fines started to get incited on businesses who, you know, got their name and information leaked as a proof of a breach.
Hey, Brian, when you went through your incident, was there any law requiring you to disclose?
No. Well, and to be fair, there is no data exfiltration, no evidence that any data exfiltration happened.
So here's my problem with that. And that's the easy out that a lot of the states are giving people. If there's no indication of data exfiltration, it's not a breach. Personally, I think a breach is just unauthorized access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to call them breaches, right? And then all of a sudden you're like, don't call them breaches anymore. We have to call them incidents. You know, it's only a breach if information's been stolen. And I would agree that, you know, it's semantics on how you're using that word.
No, I think it's a real clear delineation. I mean, a breach is unauthorized access, you know, but you have data exfiltration, data left, whether it's, you know, pictures of your high school and your 2-year-old, or it's all of your accounts banking routing number. I mean, data is data.
What I meant by semantics is it's not a long enough sentence. Is it a security breach of sensitive data, or where they've actually seen your data and they have a copy of it? Or is it a security breach to gain C2 control?
How about just unauthorized access?
Yeah, there you go. Unauthorized access.
Two words. Forget the sentence.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this was, you know, the name and shame sites was to be a proof of, you know, unauthorized access, exfiltration of data. And, you know, hopefully, you know, they would see these things as a greater threat and issue for the business versus paying, you know, whatever they had to. But even the folks that are getting put up on the name and shame site, they're not getting any backlash, like I said, from local municipalities or government entities or anything like that.
People have just become immune.
They have.
It didn't take them long, but they become immune to it. Everybody says, okay, how do we fix this? Help us get it fixed. Let's move on. You just don't see a lot of, like you said, you don't see a lot of complaining about it.
Yeah, that's, you know, I was part of the problem. Yeah, you know, I would get on these, you know, name and shame sites and I'd be like, oh, look who's been breached. Look who's been breached. Look who's been breached. You know, and all I was doing was adding to the noise and helping, I think, desensitize most people, because everybody now really thinks and not solely by my actions, but all of us, in the grand scheme of, this is just something that's going to happen. So it's like, oh, let me give you a hug. You got breached. I'm sorry. There.
A lot of these vendors, if you look at their social media, it's all about, hey, use our product to stop you from getting breached. Doesn't matter what the vendor is. Fact of the matter, it's not going to stop the breach. You know what's going to stop the breach? Education and doing a few things really well so you become less of a soft target and they move on to the next guy.
You know what this reminds me of? Is all of the vendors getting rich off of making masks.
Yeah, that's pretty much the same thing. But you mean the manufacturers in China? Because we don't produce that. Well, actually, one plug, sorry. Robert has a buddy, friend, colleague, someone he knows that actually manufactures masks down there in Florida. So kudos to him for manufacturing domestically.
They jumped into it really early.
And they make really good masks. I still even have mine. I've ordered like 3 sets of like 20. And
mine lets me look like a ninja.
I know.
But I mean, what I'm getting to is the desensitization, right? I mean, we've got over half of America that is now probably completely fine with going into another lockdown, right? And we've got a lot of Americans now that just think security incidents or breaches are normal. So they just let them happen. And there's no one fighting back. Say, no, this does not need to happen because of XYZ. Based on the data, we should be doing other things to solve this issue, right?
So how much of this do you put on the vendor? Because you're on a lot of partner advisory boards, more so than I am.
I'm pressuring vendors left and right to talk about security. When I go into a partner advisory board meeting and they're talking about roadmap updates that have to do with convenience and efficiency, I'm like, where's the security, right? You know, I've got a couple of vendors I work with that I know are focusing on security, but I'm pushing them even more, you know, for other things, especially given
this recent event. Or are they giving you the illusion of security? And be careful how you answer this, because I do have a follow-up.
I don't believe it until I see it, right? And I speak up. I, you know, I'm that thorn in their side that they're probably like, oh, great. Here's another comment from Brian around security. And we're not there yet. Right. I'm that guy. I try to be nice about it. I'm not a grumpy arsehole so that, you know,
that's trademarked.
So that we can have conversations without them getting defensive or offensive, right?
How about a conversation about just doing the right thing? And I'm going to go into a little detail here. I don't want to go into too much because I don't want to throw the vendor under the bus, but I think it's something to talk about. I have been asking for a certain type of security to be added to a product by a vendor three of us use here. They kept glad handing me saying, yeah, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. Brian asks for it once and they send me an email at like 5 o'clock one Friday evening saying, hey, can we have a meeting in the middle of August about this? We have another partner that asked for this. So do you know what I'm talking about, Brian?
Yes, I do.
Help me understand how you got them to move on that.
You didn't ask right, Shiva.
I guess you could say that I'm a lobbyist who doesn't have self-interest, but interest for the protection of everyone else out there. So I'm one of the good guys.
That's the biggest load of horse shit I've ever fucking heard in my life.
Spoken like a true political lobbyist.
I mean, I guess my self-interest is feeling more secure, right? I got to sleep at night. It's definitely a dance you got to do. There's politics involved in our industry with vendors. You know, it's sad.
Well, walk me through that because I really want to understand this. This is something I think every product in that space should have, and only one has it that I know of. How did you get them to bite on this? Because I spoke to that person about it and some of their subordinates. No movement.
I guess I need to figure out the magic. I mean, I've just been extremely involved with that vendor. Maybe they realize that if they want to make me happy. I don't know. I mean, when I first started getting involved with this vendor, I would fly to their headquarters and meet with individual department leads talking about the different things that
Or do they just brain dump you for free?
Definitely no payments.
Oh, that sucks. Get that. I'm not helping them.
But there is, you know, expenses covered, right? I mean, obviously, you know, I'm not going to pay. They're willing to go that far. But I don't know that I'd want to be paid by them because then I'd feel like I owe them something. Then it's all of a sudden a quid pro quo. right?
Here's where I take a little bit of issue with that. Not with you, but with that. Our contract with this vendor states any idea we give them becomes theirs at no cost, and they can do with it as they wish. I really don't.
That's a pretty good deal.
Oh, it's fantastic for and they're probably not the only one. Let's be honest here. However, I have a serious problem with all these vendors trying to brain dump me and then making me pay for their services. It's not my job to make them more secure. It's not my job to make them better. It is quid pro quo. I give you payment. Give me the product you sold me.
But see, here's where I will do a little bit pushback. It is, I guess, at least from my side of the house, it is at least I believe my job to hold their feet to the fire when it comes to security, especially when I'm using it. Yeah, you know, this is why I left other partners. This is why I continue to leave partners and look for partners who, at least this week, is being a little bit more conscious on security. You know, do I feel sometimes like I'm, you know, just changing my underwear and putting on a new product? Yeah, but you know, as soon as I've realized that there's a glaring hole there and they're not going to fix it, I've got to dump it, right?
Let me ask you a question there. Last week or 2 weeks ago, we were in our private Zoom room dealing with Hive Nightmare. Mm-hmm. How many AV platforms did we test it on and how many worked? And let's throw in a managed SOC. We'll leave them nameless for now.
All right. So let's give some context. Yeah. So in the mitigation steps for SAM Hive Nightmare, there is a step in the mitigation where you're taking VSS admin and you're purging all shadow copies on a workstation or a server. Anybody who deals with ransomware knows that's like step two, maybe three in their standard operating procedure, is that command to delete any and all shadow copies off of a workstation to make sure you can't restore from that is a de facto operation. So we take Microsoft bleeping computer and a couple other ones. We're saying run this command to, you know, after you make your ACL changes, run this command to make sure you get rid of any of the persistence and go forward. Well, one of the EDRs that me and Shiva use said, no, sir, you're not running this command because it is a known vector. It's a known IOC indicator to compromise for ransomware. And it got me thinking. I was like, you know what? That's actually correct. So we started going down the rabbit hole and saying, okay, let me spin up about 10 VMs in Azure. You know, I'm throwing up, you know, the EDR we use. I'm throwing, you know, various other EDR platforms.
I'm okay with not naming and shaming because I don't want people to get popped because they use a shit vendor.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to, you know, own this or anything like that. I'd be like, oh, well, this is a possibility with that type of thing. So, you know, I don't want to do any, it wouldn't be a zero day by any means, but it's, you know, these are just things that need to be, you know,
I'm discussed. Okay saying who caught it though.
Yeah. I mean, so we'll get to that, but, you know, we're throwing up other ones and nobody else is catching this command. Right. So I started going back and, you know, started talking to it and just, you know, as she was saying, yeah, CrowdStrike with Overwatch caught this.
Actually, just, I did three tests for CrowdStrike, CrowdStrike with Overwatch, CrowdStrike with just EDR, and the standard CrowdStrike. It seems weird just saying standard CrowdStrike because there's nothing standard about them. They're so damn good.
But they caught it, and you know, they don't let any variation of that run. And like, I had to go back to my old DOS 3.1 days and figure out how to run VSS admin just for the C drive and purge that stuff off of there just so I can be able to customize the mitigation steps so our proper EDR will not freaking throw a hissy fit. It's good. I like that. But you know, when you're when you're taking these indicators of ransomware or breach or data exfiltration, whatever indicator it is, and your EDR is allowing that to go through, I don't give a rat's butt if because 30 seconds later, you know, another command didn't run or another command didn't run that was part of that IOC chain. You got to look at each individual indicator as its own identity and its own thread, not looking at the whole thing, because you know, unless you got a way to roll back those changes, there's no recovering. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to break in your front door and I'm going to be able to get like 80% of the way before you realize I'm in there and then try to shut me off at the knees, you know, when about top of half of my body's already in.
I've got a couple questions. Number one, well, a statement here, I guess. I mean, the last thing I do is rely on VSS. I mean, it's there for convenience, in my opinion, but I've got a backup solution in place to prevent me from needing to care about it as much, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. The other thing too to understand is that from what I've learned anyway, and I'm constantly learning, is I've noticed there's kind of two methods that SOX look for threats. You're either building the perfect mousetrap where you're dealing with a SIM and a ton of alerts, and you are tagging for things like that. Hey, if this command runs, alert me. That's part of building the mousetrap, right? You're looking for these playbooks, these individual things that might happen in a playbook and getting alerted for them, right? And then, but the problem with that is threat actors live off the land. So a lot of the things they do, we also do as MSPs. So you're going to end up with more false positives with that type of threat hunting, right? Which isn't a bad thing. You want to have as much information as you want, but are you going to be as quick, right? To you know what I mean? And that's where you could get into an argument versus the other method of actually correlating events together to understand there's a threat that are happening in real time, right? So there's definitely two schools of thought out there. I think ultimately we should have the best of both worlds.
Here's my issue with that. A VSS delete all is rarely ever used by an MSP.
And that's a fair point.
Okay.
Yeah.
And take out redundancy, backup, and everything else. That's just part, that is a legitimate part of a adversary's playbook to delete whatever they can in the backup side. Any VSS command that is run should be flagged, not necessarily stopped, but should be flagged by any halfway decent EDR system.
Now, let me ask you this. With those recent articles, how many MSPs are now going to have clearing VSS on all machines to help remove persistence, though?
Before those articles, how many MSPs could have prevented an incident by flagging for those same commands?
How many MSPs are actually monitoring to see if those things are being run and flagging right now? Yeah. I can almost guarantee 98% of them aren't.
You know, the problem here is that we can make excuses for vendors as much as we want, or we can hold their feet to the fire as much as we want. Something like a VSS shadow copy needs to be logged. And there was one provider I used, and they claimed they did not see the command because CrowdStrike stopped it. Well, if your agent was looking at my system, they should have at least seen the command.
Yeah, and that's true because I know what vendor you're talking about. I use Sophos, and we're looking at potentially doing some testing, you know, and in the beginning, I found that Sophos stopped something, but it also showed up as an alert in their system. So maybe they've got an API integration issue with CrowdStrike. Who knows?
They're not integrated with CrowdStrike, this particular vendor. But I don't want to go into too much detail because I like the product. I like the people behind it, and I don't want to shit on them.
Yeah.
But their product, by virtue of what it is, should have seen it. Not necessarily stopped it. They should have seen it.
Now, it sounds like the gap there is really the API, the missing an API integration into CrowdStrike.
No, that's not a gap. That is, that technique for that vendor needs to be part of a string to be identified as opposed to a lone action.
Well, I guess what I meant for it to automatically log in their system, that's not to say they shouldn't have still seen the alert. Well,
let me ask you a question. If I ran that across that entire client at the same time with an RMM and that agent is on the computer seeing, hey, VSS delete all here, VSS delete all here. These are all the computers in this estate. That should have flagged something. That's not a, hey, CrowdStrike did it, so it's okay. We don't need to worry.
Yeah, you're saying their own agent should detect it regardless.
Yeah, and I have to be really careful because if I say what the functionality of that agent is, it's gonna say who these guys are. And I don't, as I said, I don't want to throw them under the bus. I just don't like the response I got and myself having to follow up with this one particular person over and over. And it was them ignoring it because they don't want to deal with it because they know they fucked up.
So let's talk about that a bit, because maybe that's part of the magic on how we're having this discussion now with this other vendor. Is I've seen that happen with other vendors where they kind of brush it off. And that's ultimately where I feel like I have to be a thorn in their side. And in some cases, that's part of what's nice about being in a partner advisory board, call on other partner advisory board members to help join the fight, if you will.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say most of those partners on partner advisory boards are fucking idiots. But I say this with peace and love.
And we're not asking you to comment, Brian, because you're on most of them. We don't want you getting in trouble.
And you are excluded from being that asshole, because just as I'm your asshole, you are our asshole. So you know,
I won't say that they're idiots. I do question the value of some members on boards that I'm on and what they're actually there for.
Groupthink. They are there for confirmation bias.
Yeah,
that's exactly what they are there for. And it is what it is. I mean, and I gave up on trying to help vendors. If you want to take my money, you help me.
Well, and here's an example, you know, and kind of going back to my earlier point, when I go to these PAB meetings and I feel like we're talking about the wrong thing, I'm pushing some of the larger vendors that I'm part of PABs with to actually create like a security subcommittee in the partner advisory board.
I did that with your little CMMC group. You know whose idea that was? This guy. Yeah. I spoke to Ryan, said, hey, let's set this up. I did three or four meetings with that group and I dipped because I knew it wasn't going to go anywhere. And I guarantee you that group is still not going anywhere.
We're moving as fast as CMMC is moving.
Yeah, dude, come on. I've already done my self-assessment. I've already put my packet in. How many people in that group have done that?
Well, yeah, I mean,
two maybe.
Yeah. The main reason I'm holding off is because I want automation. So I'm letting some wheels turn a little more before I jump into that.
That automation you're waiting on has openly said he's not going down that rabbit hole because that's not his area of operation.
I don't know who you're talking about, but
we'll go offline on that. Okay, again, another vendor I like for now.
So, but yeah, you're right. I mean, ultimately it comes down to holding the vendor's feet to the fire. I could call you out, Shiva, for if you're going to just walk away from a vendor because they brush you off. We got to be that thorn in their side and not let that happen.
Dude, they're not paying me for that. I'm paying them.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a point in time where
I'm a capitalist.
Plug.
You want the benefit of me? Pay me because I want the benefit of you as a vendor. So I pay you for your product.
Yeah.
I'm not here to raise the tide like other people in this channel. I'm here to find vendors that match what I want or exceed what I want. Yeah. Now, I've tried with that vendor, but again, they didn't want to get out of their own way because they know it best.
Yeah.
I can put my time into things that make me and my clients better and my friends, my colleagues, and people I care about, or I can keep chasing the dragon with them.
Yeah, you're right. There is a point where it's a lost cause, right? So you have to determine that at some point.
Yeah, and I mean, to Shiva's point that, you know, an MSP will be partnered with, you know, half a dozen to a dozen, you know, channel partners, you know. Brian, you're probably the only person that I know that does this, that, you know, you want to be on the product advisory board of each and every one of your partners. I mean, unless a company gets to about your relative size of team members inside of that organization, us small guys, you know, we just don't have the time to be on all these flipping calls and doing all the, like, don't get me wrong. I would love to some degree, with certain vendors, I would love to be on the product advisory board. I know for a fact I will cause so much problems, they will hate me. It's like, okay, how much time am I really going to spend on this, not being compensated, being that grumpy arsehole, you know, trying to get stuff done just to be a lost cause?
I think to dovetail off what Eric's talking about here, I think collectively, including Robert here, even though he's very quiet and not chatting with us because he's like, you guys are just fucking idiots. But anyway, I think whatever I do, I want to make an impact. And if I am seeing I'm putting the effort in and it's not being reciprocated, fuck it, dude, I'll move on. Like I tried with Sophos MTR. I saw the Sophos MTR system break and miss things. I had a call with their analyst. This analyst had the balls and the fortitude to tell me that since they tweaked their detections, there would be none for 2 weeks straight. And I said, that doesn't sound right. There's always going to be detections. It's whether or not it's going to be a false positive, this, that. He's like, no. You had zero detections. I said, fuck it. I moved on. A month later, I had a call with the head of their SOC and he himself told me that analyst never should have said that. It was an error on their side. They should have fixed. Am I supposed to stay with Sophos and help them build that and fix that?
I mean, a company as big as Sophos? No.
Any company, any partner-centric, partner-first bullshit company.
So we'll go down this path. So an international company like Sophos, no. I mean, being able to bring a potential problem up to them and stuff of that nature, yes, definitely do it. But, you know, the quote-unquote smaller folks, I mean, all of us were part of Rocket Cyber. You know, that was a small company using both internal and external you know, co-developers, but we were with it because we thought, to our core, we thought that Billy was trying to build something.
In our best interest.
In his best interest, because it's never ours, but we thought our interests aligned.
Yep.
Because I want to be fair to him. His interest and his history shows he builds good products to sell it. I was along for the ride for the good product.
But that's not the story he told me, just to be fair. He told me he was in it for the long haul, which I guess he is if he's going to sell to a company like Kaseya, because they probably got him on a 10-year contract.
You know, all their founders exit within 18 months.
Really?
Oh, wow. Look at ID Agent.
Wow. So then what he told me wasn't true. Maybe he got into the space and realized, what did I get myself into?
We were all on, you know, having, you know, independent calls and group calls where, you know, we were trying to get this product to work. We just couldn't get it to freaking interface. We couldn't get it to interface with certain third-party integrations and stuff like that. So it just became a royal freaking nightmare. So I mean, the smaller companies, I want to help. I'm more forgiving and as long as it's not a mission critical item, you know, to the safety and security of my clients and my internal team. But, you know, I'm a little bit more forgiving and patient and things of that nature and trying to help them build out that stuff. But, you know, when you go with an international company like, you know, Datto or ConnectWise or Kaseya or whatever, my patience and willing to help is very minimal when I think that it's not being reciprocated. So, you know, and I think it's pretty cool that, you know, that Brian had the ability to fly out to certain vendors and quote unquote channel vendors to the space. And while he may not got paid an hourly rate of a compensation, he wasn't, you know, he got his travel comped. So, I mean, that's kind of cool. I don't know many channel vendors that would actually do that in a non-conference type of way.
One of the cool things about the Brian effect, as we will now call it, is he got that vendor to have this conversation that we're scheduled to have in 2 or 3 weeks. And that's something that will raise the tide of all of their customers who use that product.
But Eric brought up a good point that I was kind of taking for granted. And, you know, I've got a team under me. I'm not as wrapped up in the day-to-day, right? And so I've got time to spend on this. Now, I am sacrificing spending time on my business to spend time on my vendors, but I see it long term paying off for the business. But it is kind of a philanthropy. You know, I used to do a lot of nonprofits. I ran nonprofits and it sucked up a ton of my time.
Nonprofits are not really nonprofit because the people that work at nonprofits make a decent wage for the most part.
All of the nonprofits I was part of were volunteer run boards. So there is a distinction there, right?
Got it.
I mean, it was all around education typically, or helping the local community. But what happened is I had my security incident and I immediately put a stop to all that because I realized I need to focus on my business more.
I have a question for you here, and it's a loaded question. Are you putting so much time into making your vendors better? Because, and I want to phrase this nicely, because I come at this with good intent for once in my life, because you want to stave off the possibility of yourself having another incident.
That's part of my feeling. Yeah. I mean, I've switched so many tools since 2018, you know, finding a vendor that I thought was going to solve an issue. They don't. I talked to them about it. I realized they were smoke and mirrors. They're not going to improve it. They care less. And then I'm moving on to another tool. You know, it's hard because a lot of the really good tools out there are really in the enterprise space, but they're very clunky to use from an MSP standpoint. And the other thing I'm trying to do is build a business that can run itself. So if we're so reliant on our vendors, the last thing I want to do is step away from my business knowing that we're working with vendors that are going to give my team a hard time. So, yeah, you know, I feel like there is a true partnership in our channel between MSPs and vendors. Whether or not the vendor treats it as a partnership, you know, or the MSP for that matter, ultimately determines how successful they are or can be.
Listen, I get where you're coming from. I have a fundamental disagreement there because we go to these guys for being the experts in what they're selling us. And all too often in the MSP community, security is an afterthought for a lot of these vendors. I know, and I don't, again, this episode is not about naming and shaming. I know Eric has been enumerating certain things at certain vendors as recent as yesterday, and they're egregious and should never be an issue. Not in today's world of how cybersecurity needs to be.
Yeah. So my answer to that is that I have a different outlook. I don't see vendors as experts. I see them like you and me trying to figure things out. Just like I don't see politicians as experts. They're normal people who got there pretty much by who they know. And so what I do judge is the actions they take and whether or not it's for the better good of their partners or the better good of the company. And where that gets tricky that I found with a lot of vendors is that we're all kind of unicorns here, MSPs, in the sense that we care so much about security. We stand out, right? What are we, like maybe the top 5% of MSPs out there?
No, I would say, and I'm not saying I'm part of that group because I'm just an asshole that likes to talk shit. The security minded MSPs are probably, I'd say, 0.5% to 1% of the MSP community. Okay. I don't think there are nearly enough MSPs focusing on security to match the threat landscape today and not dealing with what the MSP market was even 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Yep. So you take that small percentage and then you go to a company who has a huge partner base and you're plugging away saying you need to focus on this when it only affects a small percentage of your partners. That's where I get the head butting.
That's the wrong story. It's not affecting only a small percentage of your partners. Only a small percentage of your partners have identified the need that needs to be fixed. And so that's the issue I had with a vendor of ours that we all use, where they could not identify, they could not see what I saw.
Yeah. So the perceived value isn't there for their general partner base, right? Their general partner base would be, why are you spending time adding this? I want to see XYZ added instead, because they're caring more about convenience than security.
Exactly.
And so that's where I'm butting heads with some of these big vendors, saying you need to actually invest money into security, even if you're not going to see a return on it or a large part of your partner base be happy about it. It almost needs to be its own investment, its own roadmap, right? You've got a roadmap for features that are conveniences to make your product better and easier to use. You've got a separate roadmap with a separate budget that's set aside for security, making sure you're spending folk time on that.
I agree, but I disagree with the structure of that, because features are just new vulnerabilities that have not been identified by guys like Eric. So you need to have, what they need to do is bolster their DevSecOps. So while something is being coded, brought to life, you've got an Eric or a version of Eric banging away at it to find the holes and plug them.
No, that's definitely fair. They can't be completely separate. They got to interact. That's kind of where I'm at with that. Anything, you know, we've mentioned Kaseya on here. I know we're not bashing, but I've taken the stance that anything owned by Kaseya, I'm not touching with a 10-foot pole.
Are you an IT Glue user?
Nope.
Have you ever been?
I was until my incident. And after that, I started looking into my vendors and found out that at that time in 2018, all of the IT Glue employees could see my client data.
Well, if you ask Madeer, he will tell you that the Department of Homeland Security says IT Glue and Kaseya is completely safe.
So anyway, I immediately left them after that. And I tricked the tier one guy into admitting it, in the sense that I was literally trying to import data into IT Glue and I wasn't seeing the import, you know, so he was helping me with that. Finally, it worked. And I said, can you see that it worked? And he goes, yeah, I can see it worked now. And I was like, so you can see my data in there? Can you verify under this client what you see there for me, just to make sure that, you know, it worked properly? And he verified everything. And I was just like, wow.
You know what, dude, that is every MSP vendor out there. They're not the only one. You're talking
unless it's zero knowledge, right?
But there is no zero knowledge vendor in the MSP space. No.
If you hold the encryption key to your data,
do you?
Not for all of them, but for we're having a discussion with a vendor about adding that
PSA.
Yeah,
everything's in there.
Yep.
They can see whatever they want, even if the RMM is somewhat redacted. It's all plain text in the PSA. So there's no real, and you have that SSO between PSA and RMM. So there's no real zero knowledge. And that's my problem, right? But, you know, maybe we should do another episode one day on common data models. That way you have one set of data, everything's being accessed from there, and it's not floating around. And that's my issue with this part of the industry. But I know Eric's got to jump. I got to jump soon. Anything else you guys want to wrap up on?
No, like always, good conversation. Good to have a lot of these discussions and be able to explore them. And it wasn't 100% ransomware or us crapping on a vendor. So It was a good show.
Yeah, no, listen, anything that can push us forward, because I think that's what you need to raise the tide as the thought leaders in our community like to say. But it's okay. You too can get FBI managed security services now.
Oh God, such an inside joke. Anyway, thanks again for everybody who's tuned in. Thanks again to Robert for being able to participate in today's call. Please go to our website and to amplifiedandintensified.com. Please subscribe to the podcast. Please give us a rating on your favorite podcast. Let us know how are you doing. If you're on social media, please do the same and leave a comment down below. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, and let us know how we may not be able to do it better. We probably won't listen, but hey, at least we know you're there and participating, right? Until next time, thanks again to Mr. Brian Weiss with iTech Solutions, Mr. Shiva from Continuum, and my name is Eric, and I say thank you.
Thanks again for joining us for the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast.